Johnson, you're bringing us a rear. Gosh, sir.
Hello?
Hello there, this is Bill Ryan here.
Hi, this is Todd.
Hi, Tom.
Still ringing Kerry.
I haven't been able to raise Kerry this morning, just to let you know. Hang on a second, I'm sorry. Can you hear me okay?
Sure.
Hi, you've reached Kerry Cassidy from Project Camelot. Leave me a message and...
No joy. Okay.
Joy.
She's sleeping in. That's all right.
It's 7 o'clock in the morning Pacific time, so...
Right.
I was a little... And also because... And I say this as a joke. We joke about it all the time. She's not awfully good with numbers and things, and she may well not have realized it was 7 o'clock in the morning when she committed to it.
That's okay. She'll probably show up for the late night.
Yeah, so anyway, tell me how you would like to proceed, what I can do to support what you're doing, and I'm happy to carry the whole thing myself, but I might need a little bit of an orientation.
Well, the conference is primarily focused on activities associated with advanced energy and related technologies that are not compartmentalized yet. The ones that are still being worked on by inventors and researchers and the struggles they're going through. But there's also a little bit of overlap between that and the stage that's being set to facilitate enough support so that they can openly research and bring these technologies to the public. So there's that tipping point that you and Kerry talk about with many of the speakers that we're also focusing on, because it gives us a ballpark idea of just how far we can go before we're probably taking on too much risk.
Yes, understood. It's a very, very interesting question, isn't it?
Yes. And
okay, so tell me a little bit about this format and exactly what we're going to be doing right now. Just give me a bit of an orientation here.
Well, you've obviously had exposure to people from all over the world, many of whom have been involved with advanced energy and related technologies as far as research and development is concerned. And the purpose of the conference is to give everyone who's listening an overview, a holistic understanding of where this field of research stands and how they can contribute and support the inventors and researchers who are involved with this work.
Yep, understood. That's a wonderful open question. It's enough to keep a lot of people busy for quite a while.
Exactly. So,
okay, so take it away. Are you looking for a response, an initial response from me right now to that question?
Well, let's see. Kerry isn't on, so I guess we could just do the back and forth thing where curious who you've come across so far that has technology that people who are in a position to bring it forward, who may or may not be ready to do that, just your snapshot of what you've come across since you started Project Camelot.
Thank you. Right. Well, the first thing that I want to say is that we've never been so fortunate as to be taken down to someone's basement or someone's garage and had a demonstration of an over-unity device. We haven't had that experience.
Okay.
I would certainly welcome it. And so our knowledge of this area is pretty much secondhand. I wouldn't want to presume to know as much about it as you do and probably many of the people who are listening to this. So all that we may be able to offer are some interesting tidbits of sort of bigger picture context, as one might like to put it. But as regards specific information about specific devices, we're not in a position to be able to cast any light on that. Most of our information comes from other people whose names will be very familiar to you, people such as Brian O'Leary, Wade Frazier, and a bunch of reading and research and interviews that we've seen on the internet, just as you have.
Okay.
The first thing to offer about this is an interesting piece of context, and that is that from our perspective in Project Camelot, we've been told by several people, including people definitely connected on the inside, who are very well-meaning and who've given us very well-intentioned, friendly advice. And they said to us, listen, it's okay that you're doing what you're doing. Don't ever try and prove anything. And by that, they meant, don't try and hammer people over the head by trying to convince them with documents or photographs or bring the real alien out of a box and say, look, here it is, you have to believe it. Because that's the kind of problem. And I got this from Hal Puthoff, by the way. This is one of the people I got this from. I got this from Hal, who I spoke with. I had the privilege and the fortune to talk with him at great length 3 years ago.
Right.
And he was one of the people who first helped me to understand that one of the vested interests that the powers that be have in this whole area, this whole broad spectrum area, is maintaining plausible deniability. And we were told that there are good cultural and sociological reasons for that, which means that as long as there's a kind of fuse in the circuit, so that whatever it is that we seem to be saying, whatever crazy testimony we seem to be presenting, people aren't forced to believe it. They're not forced to challenge their reality. They're not forced to challenge their history. They're not forced to challenge the science to understand. They're not forced to challenge their spirituality or their religion. And so if they can't handle it, they can say, those guys are crazy. You see, no one's putting them in a hammerlock saying, you have to believe this and here's the proof. And that acts as a kind of buffer to the whole process. And in the meantime, all this information is being sort of percolated down into the popular culture. And it's the same with free energy. This is the link. It's okay to talk about free energy, but if someone's got a device which is wired up to meters and measurement devices, and where you can see, where anyone can see that this thing is actually doing something that the conventional laws of physics says is impossible, then there's a problem. Because it's exactly the same as us in Camelot producing a document or a photograph saying, there, this has got Kennedy's signature on it, this is real, you have to believe it, you've got no choice. Do you see what I mean?
Sure.
And so the problem is that where this then leads to is that anyone who's got a working device becomes very risky. It's okay to talk about it, it's okay to do what Brian O'Leary does, who we know and love very greatly, which is talk about the paradigm that needs to change in order for free energy to be accepted. But for somebody to say, hey, come look, take a look at this, and you can see that the thing is working, then that becomes dangerous. And one of the things that we learn from Wade Frazier, which is really, really interesting to me, he says that he's heard from several people, including inventors who have experienced this personally, that if you've got one of these things and you build it, and even if you're building it in some basement or a warehouse and nobody knows where you are and you've covered your tracks and you've sworn everyone to secrecy or you've never told anyone what you're doing, and you fire this thing up so it's working, within 24 hours or less, you'll have a knock on the door from the spooks, because they've got remote detection devices that can detect remotely somehow. They're ripples in the ether, or I don't know how to explain it physically, but these things do something that is detectable. And as soon as one of these things is fired up and becomes real, then the next thing you know, you've got a visit from somebody which you wish that you weren't having.
Right.
And it seems to me that, and I've actually spoken with Wade about this, they used to be a little bit heavier about this. It used to be pretty grim, you know, people were killed and all this kind of stuff. Now, they're a little bit more gentle about the whole thing. What they tend to do is they tend to evaluate whether this thing is going to be a commercial threat or not.
Correct.
If somebody's got something in a basement and they're firing it up and showing it to their friends and they're not actually trying to destabilize the whole global energy market with this thing, they're not trying to do a Dennis Lee with this thing, they're just kind of, you know, doing it as a science experiment,
right,
then they're likely to leave it alone. But if someone's got serious intentions to actually market a device or promote it or get the thing built all over the place, then you're really going to be in trouble. And the other thing that Wade told us is that rather than leave blood on the floor, what they do is they pay people off. And Wade said, and we really believe him, and apparently this has also been corroborated by Dr. Stephen Greer, that billions, literally billions of dollars are spent. There's a slush fund of billions of dollars which is used to pay these people off, to make them offers that they cannot refuse, to buy their silence. I don't know the names and I don't know the details, and I haven't been personally involved with any of these people, but apparently for hundreds, in hundreds of cases, silence has been effectively bought simply by making them an offer that they can't refuse.
Right. Yeah, there are a couple of researchers who are in that position right now, and if someone were to walk up to them with a check for like $20 million, I believe they would humbly oblige. And that would be
and
the end of
you
it.
Know, I... we're all human, and we've all got, you know, mortgages to pay and families to feed or projects to get on with. And if somebody gives you a check for $20 million, that's quite a difficult human situation to be in. You've got to be extremely strong and extremely tough to say, no thanks, I'm going to carry on living off pennies and doing my work. Especially when you know that if you refuse their generous offer, then they're going to ramp things up to the next stage, and that might not be so gentle, because that's the next thing that's going to come. They're not going to say, awfully sorry, okay, now we'll leave you alone. That's not the whole, that's the whole point. Right. What they're trying to do is to stop the thing from getting messy. And so it's a really difficult carrot and stick situation that these people are put in. And because most people feel so isolated, and I think this is where what Brian O'Leary has to say is so valuable, that if the paradigm were to change, if the reality of this whole issue were to be very widely accepted, even among ordinary scientists, let alone the mainstream media, then there would be some sense of safety in numbers, scientific integrity, integrity and mutual support of the community of researchers and so on and so forth. But that doesn't even exist, because even in the mainstream physics community, these guys, these brilliant inventors who are producing these devices in their basements and their garages, they're still marginalized, just like Galileo was. And so they're really on their own, fighting a lone battle in the corner. And when you've got that kind of situation, somebody's offered a check for $20 million, it's extremely hard to turn it down. I do not know what advice I would give to those people. I just really don't know.
Yeah, I'm in a similar situation. David Yurth spoke last night, and apparently he's written a manuscript that would serve as a guide for advanced energy researchers, inventors around the world. I mean, it would apply to anybody who can read English. And he offered me the opportunity to have that available to the public. So I suggested to him to have it posted to the Project Camelot website, similar to the book that was recently posted about Operation Mind Control.
Yeah.
And I CC'd him on an email to you and Carrie this morning. So he'll probably be in contact with you today, and you can just take it from there. But that's one way, is just to give the inventors an overview of what's happened, why, because a lot of them come up with something and, you know, they've been hiding in their garage for the past 10 years, so they're not aware of the fact that hundreds of people have done this before and failed, found a way to successfully fail, as I like to call it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Safety in numbers has got to be a major part in the consideration of all of this. And something that you must be very well aware of is the Free Energy Congress, which is going to be taking place in Barcelona in early February.
Right.
Which is going to Putoff will be there, Bearden will be there, Bedini will be there, a number of other people will be there. And I personally am massively excited about this, and the opportunity of being able to talk to all these people in the same place at the same time is a real, that's like Christmas for me, you know. And I'm not sufficiently in tune with the free energy community to know whether there have been these conferences before. I presume that there have been. Is the free energy community such that there has been this free sharing of information in that kind of discussion community, an open congress like this before?
Yes. Once or twice a year there's an event similar to what's scheduled in Barcelona. Obviously speakers will vary from one conference to the next, but in D.C. area alone, one was scheduled in October by Tom Vallone. It was the third conference on future energy. And then prior to that, there was an event a little bit south of D.C., about half an hour. That was, it was an outdoor event where people could set up whatever they had and demonstrate their technology. And one of them was over Unity, but all it did was light up a couple of LEDs, so they're still working on it. But they presented the math that proved why it worked. And so that option is always available to inventors and researchers.
Yeah, I think there's also a psychological component in here too, that without direct experience of this, it strikes me that it's likely to be true, and that is that most of these guys are mavericks. They're brilliant loners. They have been researching this stuff on a kind of fiercely driven personal quest for years and years and years, and they're not used to working in a team.
No.
And
there's the understatement of the interview. Yeah.
And of course, this is also true of many other fields. It's a strength and a weakness. It's when you get the strength of passion that drives somebody to be such an ugly duckling that they become a beautiful swan and they go all kinds of places where no one has ever been before. And of course the archetype for this was Tesla himself and many other giants before him too.
Right.
But even now it seems to me to be challenging, just in the normal understandable human way, for people to do, like, to come together, do a show and tell and say, hey, look, this is what I got, what have you got, can we work together and make something even better?
Yeah, exactly. I'd say the thing that I've come across that has been most frustrating to me is the lack of trust that inventors have towards outside parties, which is 100% understandable because of the money that could be involved. I always tell them that my personal involvement won't have anything to do with, you know, shooting for financial gain. I just want to get it out. And there's no way for them to know whether I'm telling the truth or not. And since they're already in their own little world to begin with, the trust factor makes it very difficult for them to reach out also.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems to me to be a very valuable function that you're fulfilling there, because if I understand you right, one of the things that you want to do is to try and coordinate some of this, to build bridges between these mavericks, to get people talking to each other, to get people sharing their ideas, and to get all this stuff in one arena where the collective weight of it will have a little bit more influence. Is that an accurate way of describing something that you would like to do personally?
That's something that I would like to see happen. I'd worked with a group of people who attempted to establish that, and I'll keep them nameless because it just didn't work out. It was another round of successfully failing, and I don't want to point fingers or anything, but I think at this point, at this late stage in the game, I know inventors have neighbors, friends, and family, and they need to reach out to them at this point for the security, for whatever support they possibly feel that they're lacking right now, and take the next step forward from there, and maybe down the road then they could consider working with an outside party that heretofore they were not in contact with. Because again, they work alone, even though they have family, friends, people who've been in contact with them for years, neighbors, and they just don't work with them. And it just boggles my mind. I don't understand it.
Well, to some degree, of course, this is part, I mean, it's like it's a commentary on modern society to some degree, where we can live in an apartment and we don't even know the guys who are behind the door in the corridor opposite us, you know. This is one of the things that we're very aware of. This is a bit of a shift of topic here, but this is, if we really have major societal problems and the infrastructure grows down, then a lot of us are very, very isolated because we don't know our neighbors, but some of us don't even know our own family.
Right.
And it never used to be like that 50 years ago. Things are really changing and people are much more, I mean, it's very ironic because we're very connected electronically, like you and I are now, but we still don't necessarily know the guy who's in the apartment next to us or who's right across the road from us. And there's a real paradox here. And none of this, I think, helps the kind of thing that you would like to see.
Yeah, that's a bit of a rub, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the timeline, since it is difficult to reach out, I think the sense that the status quo will be perpetuated indefinitely and that inventors have years and years to find a way to get it out is wrong. They have 2 years, in the United States at least, before the dollar will collapse. And I could be off a little, but not much. And if they're holding out for top dollar or whatever, the clock is ticking. And if they don't get their act together and recruit whatever resources they have available to include the people around them, then just chalk another one up in the failure column, because it's not going to happen. And you've come across the same information, and though you have a wide variety of when the doo-doo is going to hit the fan, if at all, the Lindsay Williams interview is probably as good a reference as anything, because he does have a very good track record, and what he says makes sense.
Yeah.
The common sense test is passed in his interview. It makes sense what he says. He says the stock market's going to go up a little bit, you know, indefinitely until the dollar collapses and people realize, you know, the show's over, and then it just collapses outright. Well, apparently it's doing that. Oil's holding steady. He was right on that one. Market factors are building up towards a dollar collapse. So when you say building up, that means it's not going to happen next week. It's not going to happen December or anything of this year. It's going to be at least late next year or even into 2011. So people need to use the common sense factor when they're thinking about how much time they have left to get their technology to market.
Yes. What that leads me to is an interesting question to ask you, and that is that, as best you know, how many of the people who are involved at the sharp edge of this kind of research are leaving the country, are leaving America to set up some kind of a research base or research community elsewhere because they just don't feel safe or confident where they are?
Everyone I've come across, if they're going to do that, have already done so, and did so quite some time ago. So those that remain in the U.S. that I'm aware of, my experiences suggest if they do not already have a facility or a place to go overseas, they might as well just hunker down and stockpile what they need. If they're working on research, make a decision and make it by the end of the year. Either you're going to release it to the public, you're going to sell it out, but it needs to be finished soon. And you can't dilly-dally because you want to, you know, have all your ducks in a row. You're running out of time and you can't go it alone. So if you're in the U.S. and you're thinking about leaving, it's probably a little bit behind the power curve to make that happen at this point. Go ahead.
Yeah, interesting. I was wondering whether, for example, some of the guys who you're in very close touch with personally, who make connections with some of the experimenters and researchers in Europe or even Russia. And I don't have any inside information about this, but it really wouldn't surprise me if some smart things were happening in Russia somewhere, because those guys are pretty clever. What do you know about that?
Folks in Russia that I'm aware of, I don't see any major announcement or disclosure imminent, but I don't know a lot of people overseas. There was one contact from China who said they'll be continuing to demonstrate their technology in Hong Kong, China area, and at some point in the near future they will release these units. They only produce, you know, enough power to light a light bulb, but they'll make it available to parties outside of their area. And that was one example. He said he wasn't aware of anyone else in a similar situation.
Okay.
There are a few in the U.S. that have something working, but they're not willing to take a risk and either release it to the public or attempt to go into manufacturing. I'm just not seeing it. Not the really good stuff. So I don't know what they want to do, but I guess that decision's been made for a lot of them. I'd say there's at least a dozen researchers in the U.S. that are in a position to make a decision as to whether or not to go public now and garner the support they need to move forward, or just continue to do what they're doing and in the end no one will benefit from their technology.
Okay. Well, do you feel personally that the smartest thing that they can do is something, and this is right off the top of my head, I promise you this isn't prepared.
Sure.
It is something like Dr. Stephen Greer did in the Disclosure Project Washington Press Conference in May 2001, when he wheeled everybody out all at once and said, right, guys, now you've got to listen to all these people because they're all saying pretty much the same thing all at once.
Right.
Is that the kind of thing that's possible?
Well, this conference, which is really an online phone call, couple of in-person videos, this took about 5 days to organize. So there's obviously enough support for that type of a disclosure event. I work full-time, plus I'm active duty military, so I'm not in a position to do what Dr. Greer did. I would actually recommend that he move forward because he seems about as well-positioned as anyone. But again, there's the trust factor. You know, people hear about him or, you know, as soon as there's one bad thing about any particular person that an inventor comes across, they'll just write whoever that is off. And that's frustrating because it's like Rumsfeld said, you go to war with the army you've got, not the army you want. And everybody's human, so if you're going to just write people off who have faults, then it should come as no surprise that you're working alone. So someone like Dr. Greer, it could be your group, could be all of the above, could be the folks in Barcelona that do a follow-on disclosure event. We could be involved here in D.C. It just has to happen because, again, we're running out of time for even a disclosure event, let alone to scale up a technology for full-scale production. So people need to make a choice, perhaps within the community of speakers who engage in these type of events, need to have a come to Jesus and decide, are we going to make this happen or are we going to continue to do our own separate thing and hope for the best?
Understood. Let me ask you a question here about what Stuart is doing in Dublin. Are you up to speed with what their situation is? Because they're still hanging on in there, aren't they?
Yes, they're still working on it, still interacting with the public. If there were a disclosure type of event, they would likely be willing to attend, and perhaps they're in a position to demonstrate something this time. Who knows what happened before? Hard telling if they're the good guys or bad guys, because again, if you want to be a bad guy, you make it look like you've got something, and then you fail publicly in order to trash the entire community. I don't know if they did it on purpose or by accident, but I can tell you, if I had a technology and I wanted it disclosed, it would be disclosed. And it would be disclosed successfully, and I wouldn't be doing it alone.
Yeah. I really got that. Do you think with the 60 Minutes program on Cold Fusion earlier on this year, do you think that was a little bit of a weather vane, that there may be some openings now that weren't available before?
Anytime advanced energy technologies are discussed publicly, it's always a time to stick your finger in the air and see which way the wind's blowing. The fact that it's still being called cold fusion leads me to believe that there's still not enough information out there, and again, a public disclosure would be helpful. I've invited approximately a dozen people within what should be referred to as the Low Energy Nuclear Reactions Community, LENR, but of course everyone knows it as cold fusion. Only one of them accepted, and he's a retired professor from Texas A&M, Dr. John Bockris, who was involved with the research about 15 years ago. And he's on the website. I sent you the link to the altenergy2012.blogspot.com. It's a page I set up. All the speakers are listed there. Contact information, websites will be provided as needed per their approval, of course. And people can follow up. I'll speak to him today. Let's see what time. At noon Eastern time. So I'm assuming our discussion will last about an hour. What I'll do is shift gears and play the second hour audio of David Wilcox interview from, I think it was the 10th, just to fill that hour, and then at noon I'll call Dr. Bockris and begin his live phone interview. A gentleman from D.C., Dr. Fred Wood, will follow at 1 o'clock Eastern, and then an author on advanced energy, Gene Manning, will be available at 2 o'clock Eastern time. At 3 o'clock, a two-hour interview will be conducted with Dr. Tom Bearden. So that'll be a precursor to the Barcelona conference. And yeah. Then from 5 o'clock on, if you're available, great. Don't feel obligated, because I believe Carrie will be able to step up to the plate tonight for the roundtable discussion. And it'll be pretty similar to what we're doing, except there will be more than just two people talking. Initially, the first hour will probably be just Carrie and El Priest, Elia. And he'll discuss what he's been involved with. That's more along the lines of what Project Camelot usually discusses. And then after that first hour, uninterrupted with them, we'll open it up to a roundtable. So a few more people on our end will be involved. We have the option to include callers, so I'll try that. But if somebody calls in just to disrupt it, I'll have to mute that part of the roundtable.
Okay. Well, I can certainly be there. I would like to be there.
Okay.
That's 11 o'clock my time, late at night. And what I might do is I might sit alongside Kerry, so to speak, for the first hour.
Sure.
And then maybe step out once you've got a few more people around the table.
Right.
But I'd be very pleased to be part of that.
Yeah, please do. We'll do the Skype thing, so obviously we can have conference calls with it. Is this coming through fairly clearly on your end?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
I've tested the Justin.tv feed, and it seems to come through pretty clear. Right now we have over 650, well, they're viewers, but it's just a phone call, so they're just listening in. The video shots of the area where we'll have people sitting down for the roundtable discussion tonight. So
okay, well,
we can expect over 1,000 people probably tonight.
Well, that's an important audience, and actually I would say if it's only taken you 5 days to organize this, you've done a pretty wonderful job, because sometimes it can take weeks to get these things together, so you've done a wonderful, this is a great job you're doing.
Right. Yeah, in person, when you have a full-blown conference event at a hotel, obviously that's going to take a couple months to get it right. Online, I mean, we're just doing phone calls, people in the area or those who can drive down or fly in on short notice, they're here. And I just happen to know enough people who have suffered alongside me over the last 20 years who are, I'd say, venting their frustration in many instances, but also sharing information that needs to go out to the public. And so today's calls will be a continuation of that.
Very good. Well, I'd like to say that your own determination and commitment and intention to make these things happen one way or another is coming through and hitting me right in the forehead here. It's a very strong, clear intention that you've got in it, and I support that 100%. It feels like you're saying, you know, this has gone on too long. Now is the time, and we can't mess around with this any longer. The future of the planet, the future of the human race is at stake here. We can't get this one wrong. We've got a great opportunity here, and we've got to grab it together. Does that paraphrase your view?
Very well. And also consider the realization that at this point, we really don't have anything left to lose. I mean, it's so late in the game. What are we really risking now? If the dollar's going to tank in a year or two, you know, it's the game's pretty much over. Either we're going to show our cards, we being the inventors, you know, the researchers that are out there, that group needs to just step forward now, or, you know, at a disclosure event. I would recommend that type of event be the stage for them to come forward, because this weekend, those who are willing to talk about their technologies were already willing to do so. And a couple of the inventors who have been threatened recently, one of whom apparently developed metastatic cancer in his shoulder when an ARFID device was injected into his shoulder. It was Bob Boyce from the southeast. He doesn't give out his exact location. But I worked with him for a couple months, and my experience of him suggests that instance of interference is legitimate, that it did happen. But he wasn't willing to discuss today simply because he didn't respond to my request. And another inventor did the same thing. And, you know, that's fine. I mean, it's a free country. We can still do what we want for a little while longer, at least. But I can't help them if they're not willing to work with outside parties. And we need some sort of an event, I guess, to make it happen. I thought this would precipitate such an event or drive them to move forward, but something else needs to happen. This weekend is informative for people and helpful, but it's not enough, not even close.
Yeah, sure. It's just a precursor.
Yes.
Just starting to get things warmed up a little tiny bit. Are you going to be in Barcelona in February yourself?
No. I have to work here in the States, but there will be people I know who will be out there, and they will certainly represent the interests of those within my network. So there is connectivity, without question.
Good, yes. Well, we will certainly be there, Kerry and myself, so do let us know how we can support you in that, because we're not technicians in this area, but we like to make friends with people. I think people know what we stand for. Somebody who I'm very much looking forward to getting together with in February is Dr. Hal Puthoff, and I consider him a friend, and I hope to have the opportunity to talk with him. Of course, there's going to be fierce competition for his time. But what is your view of the role that he plays in the Institute of Advanced Studies in Austin? What's he been doing the last 20 years, in your view?
He's been evaluating technologies. and for whatever reason hasn't apparently come across one that's legitimate. I've attempted to contact him on a couple occasions and he doesn't respond. Since he's a remote viewer, perhaps he's able to determine whether or not interacting with me would further his interests, and apparently he's decided that it wouldn't. So I cannot determine what his intentions are as far as whether or not he genuinely supports Advanced Energy or positioned himself to simply perpetuate the status quo. I don't know. Because again, he hasn't succeeded, and yet neither has anybody else in bringing a technology to the public, at least to reach a critical mass where the public realizes, yeah, this stuff's real. Everyone has failed. So it's still difficult to know who the good guys versus the bad guys are.
I completely understand what you mean. I spoke with Hal about this 3 years ago, and it was one of the questions I asked him, because I knew he'd been evaluating these technologies. He'd been evaluating these devices, hooking them up on a bench and seeing if they work and so on and so forth. And he told me that he had not found one that did what it was that the inventor claimed that it would.
Right.
And for me, that was a real instance of cognitive dissonance, because I believed him at that moment talking with him.
Right.
And yet I couldn't believe what he was saying. It was just really weird. It's like, what? You mean these things don't work? I can't believe that. And yet the impression that I have of Hal is he's a man of high integrity, and I don't think he was lying to me. So I don't know what's going on there.
Well, I've found a lot of academians feel this self-enlightened sense of knowing what right looks like because they've been trained through the educational system. If someone sincerely wanted to find and prove to themselves that advanced energy technologies are real, they would have.
Yeah. I understand what you mean. You're kind of saying that what it really needs is for somebody to defy their peers or the paradigms, their funders, to publish in the journals and to defy a peer review, and just to take that whole risky series of steps, very professionally risky.
Right.
But it's going to take something like that to go out on that kind of thin ice, somebody of very high stature.
Dr. Tom Vallone has stated, he did in his interview yesterday, that there are a couple of technologies that have proven the over-unity concept and that are up and running. He's aware of these, so I would trust him before I would trust Hal Puthoff, because Dr. Vallone is publicly stating that he has come across advanced technologies that do work. And
yeah,
as soon as I can figure out how to upload a 1+ gigabyte video file, then I'll have that available for everyone. But I did the live replay of the video yesterday, and Justin.tv isn't archiving these very well, so I'm going to have to figure out a way to get the link up. Once I do that, it'll be high enough quality you can review it or present it to outside parties. But it'll be available on that same webpage.
That's pretty good. Well, maybe we can take that offline and we can help you with that. There'll be a way to compress that file to make it much smaller without losing quality.
Right.
But, I mean, sharing that kind of information, it's just as widely as possible. It's just so important at the moment. And in 2010, next year, do you see yourself as possibly taking part in some kind of a free energy disclosure event? Just modeling this on the Stephen Greer's event in 2001. Do you think something like that is possible?
If it is in D.C., I would. For whatever reason, Greer's group isn't in contact with me. I don't think even my wife anymore. And some of the inventors I've been in contact with aren't in contact with them anymore than they used to be. So I'm not sure what's going on with that. But if it were in the D.C. area, I would volunteer just as I normally do. Yeah.
Organizing a big event, of course, is no simple matter. It takes considerable funding. Somebody's got to dig in their pockets and be willing to stake out $15,000 to $20,000 just to make the thing happen, which of course may well be recouped. It may well be recouped, but you've got to be willing to lose it, so to speak.
Yeah.
So these things don't always make you rich, that's for sure. And there's some people who've held conferences to a big vision and they've lost a lot of money. And so I'm not saying this to be a downer, it's just that like it needs a little bit of planning.
It does. I've scheduled conferences in the DC area and our network paid for them ourselves. They're not in a hotel, but they're at locations where anybody can show up, and a couple thousand people normally show up to these events. This online event, which is what it is for all practical purposes, yesterday almost 5,000 people, it looks like, viewed some of the video content. So I expect the same number today. So this online conference reached as many as 10,000 right off the bat, and then when the links go viral, that number doubles at a minimum. So there's a way to reach people without having to spend big money to secure a conference room.
That is true. I think virtual conferences are a real way to go. And I mean, right now, do you have any kind of a measure on how many people are listening to us talking right now?
Yeah, it's in real time, showing 702 viewers right now.
That's pretty, okay. Well, hello to everyone, wherever you are, all over the world. This sounds a bit like George Norrie. I imagine, actually, that there are some people who are listening from Europe, maybe even from Australia, from other parts of the world. It can't just be Americans, right?
Yeah, I would suspect it's all over the world. Normally, a U.S.-based event, I'd say 70-80% of the listeners or viewers are stateside.
Yeah. And all of this content is going to be archived and be made readily available in one place after this weekend. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
Very good.
The Skype call's recorded. I also have a portable audio recorder. A camcorder's picking up the audio. Plus, Justin.tv is supposed to record it, but it's been spotty, so I'm not going to rely on that. So we have plenty of backup. Redundancy is what we learned in the military, and we'll continue to, you know, take that approach to ensure that all the content that is shared this weekend is made available to the public, preferably by the end of today. But again, the large video files I'll have to screw with later.
Very good. Well, let us know how we can support you publicizing that from the Camelot site. We would certainly love to do that.
Okay. Yeah, once we have everything posted and ensure that all the links are good, the content is of sufficient quality, then we'll forward you a link, and then you can post that on the Project Camelot website. And preferably we'll do it in conjunction with the announcement of a disclosure event. But again, I don't know when that will happen or who would be involved. That depends entirely on the people listening and those who are already active within the advanced energy community.
Understood. It's a nice label that you've got there, by the way, calling it the advanced energy community. Is this something which I'm not up to speed with, that there are many people who prefer calling it advanced energy than free energy?
It's kind of like the LENR community. Some call it cold fusion because they believe some of the reactions are fusion processes, whereas others see it as more conventional nuclear reactions taking place under unique circumstances that would not ordinarily happen. So everyone has their version of what it should be called. Zero point, advanced energy, free energy. I can tell you it's not free.
That's why I picked up the term, actually, because calling it advanced energy is, it's got a nice sort of slant to it, and I hadn't actually heard that little phrase before, and I immediately liked it, and so I just wanted to comment on that.
Okay, well then we'll see if we can make it stick.
Let me just jump a little bit out of the box here to make things maybe a little bit interesting for the listeners.
Sure.
Representing Camelot, and I know Kerry well enough to know that if she was here in the early hours of the California morning, she would be saying, what influence on free energy or advanced energy disclosure do you think would be the potential disclosure of the reality of the extraterrestrial presence? And I do know that for some people listening to this, this may seem to be slightly crazy stuff, because people who are listening to this may be hands-on, they may be pragmatic, they may not take their research into those esoteric directions. But for us, it is almost axiomatically real that the Earth has been visited by extraterrestrials, or maybe they're not extraterrestrials, maybe they're something else, but they're certainly not from here. And if they are coming here, they're not coming here in rocket ships, and therefore there is an automatic link with the whole subject of free energy or advanced energy. And I wondered what your personal thoughts were about that.
That's fine. I'm not concerned about my own reputation personally. The low energy nuclear reactions, cold fusion community, they have to be politically correct in what they do, so I'll state point blank that everything I'm sharing from here on is just my own views. This is based on my own experiences and those of friends and family. Extraterrestrial presence, at this point in my life, it's very commonplace. They don't physically manifest, but some of friends and family interact with them in the astral plane or the etheric plane, however you want to describe it. And a lot of that actually brought us to a point where we could support advanced energy. So their influence has prompted, in my opinion, many people who are scientifically predisposed towards this research to develop some of these advanced technologies. It can't be suppressed. I mean, if you kill all the inventors, the extraterrestrial influence will still be there, and other people will simply pick up the baton and run with it. It's just, it delays. It's like Israel bombing Iran's nuclear facilities. Yeah, you've delayed it a few years, but all you've done is smack the hornet's nest. You know, now they're really going to step up to the plate. And I use that analogy intentionally because the stage is being set for that conflict to transpire. And our goal is to avoid that.
Yes. It matches. This is once again, it's slightly off topic, but some of your listeners may be interested to know that we have received off-record credible testimony from people fairly deep on the inside who say that this conflict with Iran is absolutely slated and it's on course, and it's not going to happen next month or next year, but possibly in about 18 months or 2 years' time.
2 years.
And so, just as you were saying with the economy, we've got a little bit of a breathing space to try and steer the planet in a different direction.
Barely.
Just a bit.
Barely. I mean, if you just follow the markets, you can see where the dollar's headed. We just left the deflationary cycle, and from this point on, the dollar will continue to lose value relative to everyday commodities that we buy at the store. It hasn't done that since the recession started. It will beginning next year, and it's not a linear curve. It's exponential. And when it reaches a critical mass, along with, you know, a certain number of people being unemployed, a fraction of people declaring bankruptcy, there's that self-organized criticality that actually works against us and destabilizes the global economy, and the house of cards will fall down. That's
exactly.
Irreversible now. We can't turn that around as much as I would like it to. But I still feel that a disclosure event educates people so that they feel empowered enough to take action even when they have two strikes against them. They have to know that that option is out there. They can move forward, and that the extraterrestrial presence as an example, that's something they can lean on. I prefer to interact more so with angels and archangels because of my Christian belief system, but that doesn't push the ETs to the side. I actually feel that they all work together, because they do. My experience of them and everything I've come across suggests that they're just, you know, apples and oranges. They're all fruit. They're all working together, helping us out, because if they didn't, we would self-destruct.
I would concur with that. And it's, for me, the significance of expanding the scope of the conversation just a little bit in those directions, it's because the world is not the way we are taught it is in school. It's not the way we learn it is from our parents. It's not the way that we're told it is by our politicians, and even by our, the scientists who have a public platform. The world is really very different. It's much more complicated. It's much more wonderful. It's much more multidimensional, if I dare use that phrase.
Right.
And if it weren't, then we'd still be operating within the small box of Newtonian physics. And this whole discussion that we're having about disclosing and promoting the reality of free energy or advanced energy would be a non-starter, because these things would be impossible. The very fact that these things are possible tells us that there are things about the universe that we seem to understand through our direct experience, working with the simple Newtonian laws of physics in our everyday life. The fact is that there is much, much more to this story than that. And because that's a reality, incorporated in that wider reality are not only other principles of physics that in the public sector we may not properly understand yet, but also there are other aspects of consciousness, other aspects of spirituality. We've known for nearly 100 years now that in order to really make progress in understanding what is the nature of reality, you've got to factor consciousness into this. And as I said just a few minutes ago, assuming that extraterrestrials exist in some form, they're not traveling here with rocket ships. They're using something else, and it would be very, very much in our interest if we could find out what that something else was. And it probably dovetails exactly with some of the principles that the inventors and developers listening to this are talking with. It's all part of the same huge ballpark, and that ballpark is much, much larger than most of us realize. This is really the point I was making.
Yes, I agree. You're absolutely right.
And politically, the interesting thing here is that as Project Camelot, we're hearing information coming at us from all different directions in this huge ballpark. And one of the discussions that we frequently get into is the topic of when is the reality of the extraterrestrial presence going to be disclosed on an official formal level. And just to whet the appetite of some of your listeners there, we were told about a month ago by somebody who had pretty direct experience. He said that a speech had been written for Bill Clinton in his first term of office,
right,
disclosing the extraterrestrial presence, but as we all know, that was never actually presented. That particular event never happened. And there's some reason to believe that Obama may be being set up for this right now. There have been some extraordinary announcements by the chief Vatican astronomer, whose name I can't remember. He said a few months ago words to the effect that assuming that extraterrestrials exist, we have to bear in mind that they're all our brothers and sisters under God. And that's my paraphrase, but as a committed Christian, you may understand where he was coming from and why he was saying that. And then they had an astrobiology conference in Rome last month, I think it was, which is an extraordinary thing for the Vatican to be hosting. And meanwhile, on television there in America, we've got Larry King live on his show, hosting more programs about extraterrestrials and UFOs than has ever happened before. And the reason why all this is relevant politically, as it were, using the word exopolitics, as it was coined by Alfred Weber and promoted by Michael Sala, the whole exopolitical thing is that if this reality is confirmed on some level with some kind of a formal statement at governmental level, whatever it is, then there is an opening for the free energy community. Then there's an opening for you guys who may never have looked up at the sky and looked at anything or even been interested to do that, because then the door is open. You can say, okay, now we have something here that that we have now been told is reality, whereas previously we had been encouraged to deny it, both to each other and in terms of our own belief systems. There's an opening here, and as I said before, they're not coming here in rocket ships, and so suddenly the whole free energy community has a platform to stand on, which it didn't have before. And the timing might be interesting, because just possibly something like this could happen next year or the year after.
Well, tonight, Elijah Priest will talk with you and Carrie, if you're both available, about when we will independently initiate a global contact event, and the level of support required for that event to transpire. We'll do this initially without government involvement until they're embarrassed enough to say, gee, maybe we should get involved with this rather than look like complete idiots. Because you can't suppress something that's blatantly obvious for very long without discrediting yourself. And they're trying to balance when they can do that, because if they did it now, they actually discredit themselves more than if they wait, which is why they haven't done it yet. So independently, we have to work together to initiate a global contact event. You know, lights all over the sky like we've seen in Mexico, you know, where ships everywhere. It's actually been all over the world. Pyramids are floating around above Russia and U.S. last week. Curious stuff. But we need to do it more blatantly, more obvious. And again, it's just, we're fighting the war and we're winning it and we will win it. It's just taking a little longer than you and I had hoped it would.
No kidding. That's right. It's interesting, isn't it? Just, you know, that these events are happening in quite large measures in some other countries, particularly in Central and South America. There are extraordinary things happening all over the skies. But because of the language problem, and because, if I dare say it, of the myopia of parts of the American media, even the American alternative media, if I dare say this, that things happening in some other country, in some other language, in some other culture, just don't have the prominence that they really should have, because these are extraordinary global events that have been happening. Right. Would you agree with that?
I would, and I'd state that the reason the industrialized nations are most resistant to the change is because they perpetuate the false religion of materialism. It's not Christianity versus Islam. That's ridiculous. It is light-based belief systems versus materialism. So it should come as no surprise that South America is stepping up to the plate before the United States, because relatively speaking, we're far more developed economically and materially. So that's our crutch. That's what's holding us back. And I hate to say it, but in some respects, an economic collapse would do us some good. But it's going to bring so much suffering that I just can't embrace that outcome. Anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. And I suppose I'm just trying to think about which way to take this conversation Now, you should probably steer it, although to some degree it may feel that I've been interviewing you. That's because I'm genuinely interested to learn more from this opportunity of talking with you, representing this community here.
I'd say since you're available tonight, we'll just use this to whet everyone's appetite, including our own. And then when we log back on at 5 o'clock Eastern, there's another 3 hours available. And I hopefully, if you know the audience interacts effectively with us without disruptors, 2 hours of those 3 hours tonight will be available for roundtable discussion with the audience, the online audience. And the call-in number and passcode, that'll be posted on this Justin.tv site. It's already posted on the altenergy2012.blogspot.com website. And I'll make sure that's active beginning at 4:45 Eastern. And I just posted the link there. So if you take a look at justin.tv/AEWC2009, all the chat conversation outlines what will be going on tonight. And we have 800 viewers.
I look forward to that because I suspect that you've got a lot of very smart people who would like to take part in that conversation, who've got a lot of very interesting perspectives and a huge amount of collective experience. And if you can find a way to moderate that discussion effectively, then I think it's going to be really fascinating.
It'll work out. I've been scheduling off-the-cuff events like this for 15 years, off and on, so it comes pretty naturally. I know how to serve as a gatekeeper when necessary. Also, I'll invite you to join us, you and or Carrie, for the second half of Tom Bearden's interview from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern time. I'll call him on Skype, so if you want to join us for that, I know you wanted to interview him, you can just call in and ask him some questions. He has a few items he'll be discussing already, and he can go nonstop for 2 hours, but if you'd like to talk to him, that would be a good opportunity.
Well, thank you very much. It sounds like actually I could just sit and listen very happily for 2 hours. I probably don't have to ask a single question.
Yeah, that'll
Brian
work.
O'Leary has offered several times to put us in direct touch with Tom Bearden. A number of other people have as well. I don't know if he knows about us,
but
we have the greatest respect for his work, and we would be fascinated to have the opportunity to talk to him. And if we don't manage it this afternoon, your time, then we're certainly looking forward to catching up with him in Barcelona.
Yeah, that's true. You'll meet him then, if he's available. His health may not afford him the opportunity to fly out, but hopefully he'll be okay for it.
Now, let me ask another question, which is actually about the scope of your mission, let me put it that way. And that is that, as you know, there are a number of very ingenious adaptations of the internal combustion engine, like the Pantone engine, the Geet engine, various aspects of hydrogen and water-powered cars.
Right.
Now, that's not free energy, but it is a form of advanced energy. At least it's a little bit advanced, if I may dare to use that word. Is this something that interests you and your community, or is that regarded by you as a different subject that belongs somewhere else?
Anything that improves where we're at in terms of energy consumption is welcome. And there are researchers who openly support that technology as well as the advanced stuff. So we don't draw the line. We leave the individual listeners, participants, researchers, we leave it up to them to decide what they want to focus on.
Yeah, that's pretty smart, actually. We're quite close to somebody who's doing a lot of research work with the Geek Pantone technology. That's the way of start tweaking, and it really is only tweaking, just the standard internal combustion engine so that it can run on 80 or 90% water. It's right. Very, very ingenious. It doesn't break any of the laws of physics. It's not free energy. It's not over unity, but it sure as heck can make a difference to the world. And one of the really interesting things which I heard, and this is just a little snippet of information that may be of interest to some of your listeners, the guy who's developing this in Europe, who I'm quite close to, and of course there are many people working on this all over the world, his name is Andreas Kalker, wonderful man. He has several prototypes working. He's made a good demonstration YouTube video about all this. His website is called hydronica.blogspot.com. And I asked him whether this kind of technology, advanced engine technology, would be of interest to motorsport, like to people in Formula One, which of course has got a lot of money, a lot of technology behind it, with great rewards and a huge amount of money at stake for people who can just shave a fraction of a second off lap times in these extremely fast cars that they've got. And he just smiled at me, and he said he's already asked that question, he's already been talking to them, they're already using this stuff. He said to me, they're doing it all very quietly. He said, how do you think they get such high RPM in their engines without the whole thing overheating to all hell and gone? These internal combustion engines working at 20,000 RPM is because they're already operating using some of these principles. And that really interested me, actually. It's just a little anecdote, and it's got nothing to do really with the main mission of your conference, but I thought some of your listeners might like to hear that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was someone down in Texas that has full-blown hot rod that's running on water, you know. So, yeah, people, you know, with too much time on their hands can come up with all kinds of wonderful stuff.
Yeah. That's right. Another aspect of this, which is another cousin to this whole area, I guess, is advanced battery technology.
Right.
Now, once again, that's not over unity, that's not free energy. I heard from somebody that in Japan there is a developer who has developed a battery technology with an extraordinary efficiency for retaining huge amounts of charge. Now, I don't know any of the details, so I apologize to any of the listeners for whom I'm not able to supply any details. And guess what? They can't get funding. Guess what? They can't get anyone to listen to them. And yet this is very... this isn't esoteric physics at all. It's just a smart use of existing technologies. And there must be so many applications. There must be so many ways, without trying to get anyone to be convinced that the impossible can be done. It's right. Just engineering. It's just technology. It's just a natural progression of the principles which we're already using. And even that, it seems, in some areas, is just being ignored. Do you have experience with that?
Some limited experience with that. While you were talking, I was reading through my Gmail account, and the gentleman who was going to speak tonight, Elijah Priest, was admitted to the hospital with acute appendicitis. I kid you not. So, just going on the fly like I usually do with these events, we have an open end as far as our finish time with Dr. Bearden, and you know his health will allow him to talk for so long, but I think at this point we should consider the option of having you and Carrie call in perhaps towards the end of that two-hour interview that he was already planning on doing. And I've sat with him in his house, and he can go over information nonstop for hours and hours. So after that 2 hours, he'll have the information he wanted to cover completed. And I can call you and Carrie on Skype. if you're available.
Good, yes, okay. We'd be delighted to make ourselves available in whatever way you feel might be best. And let's give you a little bit of thinking time there, because clearly there's a situation. We hope that he's okay, of course.
Yeah, he should be fine.
That's the most important thing, but I'm sure that he would want the show to go on, and maybe with Tom Bearden's help, if he really is able to talk for hours, and I don't doubt it for a moment, then that could be the backbone of a slightly rearranged event this evening. And we leave that all up to you. We'll do anything we can to help.
I already made that decision. Since he's not available, he has a couple of people that work with him, but he's in the hospital. I'm not gonna have that scheduled. So either the conference ends when Dr. Bearden is finished, or if you're available, I'll contact you via Skype, you and Carrie, and then you can do some Q&A with him and kind of set the stage for the Barcelona conference, since all of you will be involved with that.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, please tell Tom Bearden that it will be our privilege to have the opportunity to talk with him. And we don't really have a whole long laundry list of questions to ask him, because it's probably all part of his presentation anyway. Of course, it would be very interesting to get his take on some of these more visionary issues that you and I have been talking about just now, about what might happen in the next 2 years, where he thinks it's going, what he thinks at stake, how he's feeling personally about this. It would be interesting to have a non-technical discussion with him about it, just to see how he's regarding the whole thing physically. How he's regarding the whole thing personally,
right,
and how he's been holding up. What keeps him going all of these years? What keeps him standing? I would be really interested to hear that, just as a human question.
Okay.
Anyway, enough of that. So I'm very sorry to hear about that old priest. That's a bit of a shock, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you suspect foul play? I have to ask that.
Possibly. There's no way to know.
All I know
is he's in the hospital with acute appendicitis. That's something people get regularly, so that's probably what happened.
Yep. Sure. Understood. Okay.
So I guess we can close for now, and I'll play the second hour of your interview with, Carrie's interview with David Wilcock.
Right.
And that'll complete this two-hour block. And then I'll start with Dr. Bockris at noon, and Fred Wood at 1, Gene Manning at 2, and then Tom Bearden at 3 p.m. Eastern. And if he's comfortable with it and he feels good enough to continue past his initial interview, then I'll call you and Carrie, and I'll just have you take it from there.
Very good. Okay. Now, just before we sign off, it's theoretically possible that I might not be immediately available as early as 4 p.m. your time. 5 o'clock definitely, but I'll be in touch with Carrie. I'll make sure that she's set up for this. I'll give her a briefing about what's happening.
Yeah, 5 p.m.
After you. Go on.
No, I said 5 p.m. is a good start time if you want to shoot for that.
Yeah, that works very well for me, but I'll be around a little bit earlier.
Okay.
And thank you very much for everything you're doing. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. There's a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, that's for sure.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for making yourself available this evening, your time.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. I want to extend my regards to everyone out there who's listening. Do drop in on the Camelot site. If you're not familiar with our work, we cover a very, very wide range of material. Free energy, alternative energy, advanced energy is one of them. And the thing that is a common factor in everything that Kerry Cassidy and myself at Project Camelot are focused on is empowering the human race to be what they can be by allowing access to all the suppressed information, all the suppressed knowledge, all the suppressed history, all the suppressed science, that is being denied us by those people who want to keep us in a very small box because they have an agenda of their own, and because we potentially, as human beings, are so magnificent that they do not let us have the knowledge that could give us the power that is our birthright. And that's what we stand for, and I believe you join us in that sentiment, Todd. Is that right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. All right. So thank you. And I'll sign off now, and we'll catch up with you later, and thanks for everything you're doing.
All right, Bill. You too.
All right. Bye. Bye.